from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made the day after Election Day 2012. President Barack Obama has been elected to a second term, and the pundits were declaring that the Republican Party could not win the White House in the future if it failed to win over the Latino vote. America is becoming more diverse, the pundits warned, and the GOP cannot turn its back on diversity. But then look at the numbers. 17% of the United States population now Latino, nearly 13% of Rochester's population. But Latinos hold only about 3% of elective offices. Why is that? What would happen if that changed? And how could that happen? Well, we've got a panel that's talking about representation of Latinos in American politics, and we're talking all the way down to the local levels here. We're talking city, county, state, and beyond with a great panel. First of all, in studio, it's a full room. Anthony Plazinski is here. Anthony is the leader of the 21st District here in Monroe County for the Democratic Party, and you're a community organizer. You're kind of a Democratic Party thinker, an operator, all of those things.
Progressive thinker.
Yeah. A progressive thinker, all of those things. Anthony, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also in studio is Luis Perez, a former candidate for elective office. Four times. You took the year off from running for office.
I took more than a year off.
You've taken a few years off. But you've been there. You've run for office. And, Luis, you've run for which offices?
I ran for school board. I ran for mayor. And then I ran twice for the Northwest City District Council seat.
And politics is tough business, isn't it?
It can be tough. It's not for everybody.
Well, we're going to talk about your experiences and how they fit into this broader discussion. It is not just Democrats in the room. We've got Mercedes Vasquez-Simmons in the room. She's the founder and owner of Pretty Girl Productions, a city resident, a Republican, and someone who's proud to be active in her community. Mercedes, nice to see you.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Is that a fair representation?
That is a fair representation. I'm active in my community, and anything that affects the community, my Latino community, I want to make sure that we're well represented.
Tricia Cruz is here, and she was on the program yesterday talking about the upcoming Vos TEDx talk. And before we left, Tricia and I decided I had to bring her back because I know you've been so active in this community in so many ways. She's the Director of Development and Communications at Ibero American Action League, but also, frankly, I think just a smart observer and someone close to politics locally as well, Tricia.
Well, yes, and of course that would be because of my fiancé.
That's right.
No other reason, but...
Yeah, so...
No, actually, that's not true. I take that back because now I make it a point just to know who the elected officials are. I do my research, do my due diligence to make sure I know who I'm voting for.
And your fiancé is?
Paul Irving.
All right, Paul Irving. And so Tricia Cruz in studio with us. On the phone with us is Julio Saenz, the former editor of Conexión magazine through the DNC, the author of the book Rochester's Latino Community. And Julio is in Atlanta now, is that right?
Yes, sir, but in Rochester in spirit.
Rochester in spirit. Well, it's nice to hear you, and thank you for taking the time, Julio. Thank you very much.
Hey, Julio.
Thank you.
Well, let me start with Anthony, because Anthony and I had a conversation a few days back about this issue, and you have referred to the Latino community as kind of the sleeping giant in American politics when it comes to voting, Anthony. I know you're not the first to coin that phrase, but mm-hmm. when it comes to participation in government, we see a misrepresentation when it comes to elective offices. 3% roughly on the national level of offices are held by Latinos, but we know the percentage of this country, and certainly in Rochester, is much higher than that. What's going on?
Well, the one thing I will say that we are proud of here locally in Rochester is outside of New York City, we are the second largest area with the second largest amount of elected Latino elected officials. And so that's something that does often get passed up. But still, when you think about the percentage of representation here in Rochester, we're still behind. And as we talk about the trends moving up in terms of population, what we are seeing more and more is that we now are turning to the idea of educating our electorate and really instilling the idea of an American civic duty. Many will talk about the days of going back to their home countries or going back to their origins, especially, Puerto Ricans, speak to that idea and being a Puerto Rican American is that, elected office and voting is almost religious in that sense, is that individuals at 90% turnout rate in Puerto Rican elections, and folks who really kind of galvanized behind them, and the caravanas and all of these different parts. And so you see that now, I think now that the Latino population is increasing here, we really are turning towards an idea of what does it mean exactly to vote here in our local communities, and how do we organize our communities and take that next step.
The New York Times wrote a piece this past summer called Why Hispanics Don't Have a Larger Political Voice. And they write, quote, Nate Cohn, writing for New York Times, writes, quote, one reason is that no demographic group is more marginalized in American elections than Hispanics. Many are ineligible to vote, while those who can vote often do not or are concentrated in non-competitive districts and states. The dynamic will be particularly strong in the 2014 midterm elections in November, when Hispanic voters will represent a tiny fraction of the electorate of the states and districts critical to the battle for control of Congress. So while we heard pundits talking about the value of minority votes after the last presidential election, the New York Times is saying it's far too easy, especially on the national level, for Hispanic voters to feel marginalized. Is that fair?
I do believe that's fair. And I think you go back to the old saying that everybody talks about, Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. And the idea that, you know, we section our communities off and put the Latino community and spread them so thin that there's not one core district that you have here that you could say is a Latino district, or a district that the population sample represents. And so you go back to this idea of gerrymandering and looking at how those things are cut up. And so, you know, I can speak from experience, is that a large part of why Latinos have been successful here in the Rochester area is that they cross boundaries in terms of the voting public. I mean, you look at someone like Councilwoman Jackie Ortiz, who was third in an at-large city council race, and that wasn't just because of the percentage of Latinos in the city of Rochester. She had Caucasian individuals, African American individuals voting for her. And so I see that in order to be successful, especially in the city of Rochester, you have to cross those multiple ethnicities.
And we cannot speak about Latinos monolithically. I'm sitting in a room on the left. I've got a left and a right in this room. And we've got a political left and a political right in this room. Right. Mercedes is already nodding at me. As Anthony said, gerrymandering has been an issue in this country for a long time. But even if there were quote-unquote Latino districts, it doesn't mean it would be an easy pickup for a Democrat or a Republican, as you have said, Mercedes.
Right, and I absolutely agree with Anthony on that. There's also political stance. I mean, you look at political agendas that are specific to immigration. That topic itself is, you know, it's skewed to a certain demographic of within Latinos. So within the Latino population, there's different agendas that are important to them.
Now, Mercedes, you're registered to vote. The New York Times is saying that one of the big issues across the country is that Latino eligible voters with Hispanic backgrounds are often not registered. Is that true among your friends, your neighbors, people in this community?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. But it goes back to just educating our constituents and making sure that, you know, as a Latino, you do have the right to vote, and hear what your rights, you know, consist of. You know, being active in your community, going to City Hall and advocating for those things. So again, it goes back to educating our population.
Tricia, are we seeing that improve in this community? Are we seeing more opportunities to, more efforts to register more voters and more outreach going on?
I would say yes and no. You know, Ibero certainly recognizes, for example, here in Monroe County, we have 63,000 Latinos. And a lot of people don't realize that for Monroe County, that's a large number. We have the power to determine every single election. But if you took a look, and the Board of Elections doesn't even keep track of how many Latinos vote, because I've tried to get that information in the past, and they don't keep track of it. So the power, you know, it's there, but it's not happening. So one of the things that we're actually doing at Ibero we have in the works to put together a voter education program, because Latinos need to be made aware of who their elected officials are, you know, what they're doing, you know, have a meet and greet. That will include that as well. For example, where Latinos are, you know, meeting their elected officials, they're learning more about them, they're learning more about the process, why it's important. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, don't think their vote counts, when that's really not the case at all.
Julio Sainz, let me ask you, what are you seeing? Again, you're joining us from Atlanta, but what did you see in Rochester, and how does that compare to efforts at outreach, registration, et cetera?
Well, I think it's interesting, having worked in a few different markets across the country. I've talked to a few people in Rochester about what I see as one of the biggest problems is that there isn't an overwhelming rally point, political rally point, that gets people out and fired up. There was in the past. I think in the 70s, when the community was more politically active, there was a battle for bilingual education and advocating for that. And that sort of dissipated as people have moved out to the suburbs, and that battle's been won, and there hasn't been a rallying point the way there is in other communities. In Miami, for a long time, you had the anti-Castro sentiment that would get people out to vote, you know. And in other parts of the country, it's immigration, but because Rochester's population is predominantly Puerto Rican and doesn't have that issue, that's not really there's some sympathy with the other communities that do have that as a problem, but it's not that rallying point that can get people out to vote. And that's one of the things I think the leadership in the community has to try to find to get people out.
We have a question from a listener, and I want to start with Luis on this, and we can have the entire panel answer this. But Jake writes to us, although proportional representation is important, are Latino issues themselves really underrepresented? I don't see the same issue disparity as with, say, African-American minorities. Luis, what do you think?
Yeah, whenever someone is not at the table, they're being underrepresented. You know, the study that came out some years ago, The Tyranny of Majority, talked about and studied the fact that at the national level, if you added people of color or of particular ethnic background, that the issues that that population was dealing with was more readily talked about, and even to the point of bills actually being introduced to help alleviate that. And the bottom line is, if Latinos are doing better, the community is doing better. But we do bring some particular needs and differences to the table, you know, everything from large populations that come and go, and also the whole language issue that can really intimidate people. The other thing I'll say is this, that going back to a couple of questions earlier, is that, first of all, voter apathy is across the board. So we're no different there, really. But having been a candidate for four times and knocked on a lot of doors and talked to a lot of people, if people don't feel like their vote can make a difference or have an impact, they're just kind of disengaged. I mean, life is life, and they're trying to make it all happen. And it's one of those things that's there, but it's not at the top of the list.
And Luis, when it comes to those issues, as you say, if you're not at the table, it's hard to have your issues focused on, addressed. But what are Latino issues? I think that's part of what Jake is asking here, is that what are the issues that might be missing?
Right. I don't think there are a lot of them that are missing, but they're more pronounced. So when you look at the numbers and you look at dropout rates, you look at poverty, you look at housing issues, incarceration rates, you know, compared to the number of Latinos in any particular area, we're always beating those numbers. You know, the good thing is that we're growing in numbers. That's a positive thing. And Julio can talk really to this. I've heard him share a number of times around these issues. But the other side of the coin is that the issues that we face are that much more pronounced.
Julio, you want to add to that, Julio?
Well, I think the problem with the growth in the area is I think it's a chain. You have things that could be better for the Hispanic community, better resources in education, better support in the community, that would then help the community grow. And I think that's something that would be really good for Rochester. And I've talked a few times, some of these guys have heard me talk about that, you know, there's these hyper-growth markets or communities in the country where all of a sudden there's, you know, Atlanta's one, you know, the Hispanic population grew something like over 900% in a decade. And it's been a huge economic engine for the region. And wouldn't it be great if we could do something like that in Rochester that could really help the economy take off and bring in all types of talent?
Go ahead, Anthony.
I think it would also be misleading to say that there are no Latino issues. or that they're really just, we've kind of melded into this melting pot of what America is. I mean, I think you take, for example, some of the work that the Latino Education Task Force has done with the Rochester City School Board in the last year. Though we have a director of bilingual education, and we talk about the fight for bilingual education over the years, what does that look like? What's the implementation of those processes? And so I think you see mayors like de Blasio in New York City, and even locally, some of the arguments the Latino community has here is that there's a lack of representation in those areas. And we talk about issues, and I think a lot of the issues center around language. You know, it's the common thread that weaves all the different cloths, you know, whether you're Mexican, whether you're Puerto Rican, whether you're Dominican, whether you're Ecuadorian. You know, language is a defining characteristic that crosses everyone. And we talk about what is available in terms of language services for individuals within the community who are predominantly Spanish speakers. You look at the Latino dropout rate being lower than almost every community in Rochester. You know, the only other rival in terms of being at the lowest right now with the Latino dropout rate is African Americans. And so you look at those areas, and those by default become Latino issues, because you look at the disparity in the graduation rates, you look at the disparity in those who are achieving and not achieving, and where the opportunities lie. Though we are seeing a big a big kind of wash into the suburbs with middle class Latinos, I think right now we're also trying to define ourselves of trying to get back to our people, you know, trying to get back to where we came from, the working class individuals who made the transition here in the 70s looking for jobs. And those individuals still exist in the housing projects. Those are the individuals who are fighting for housing opportunities and fighting for the ability to have governmental services to give them a hand up and not a hand out. And so you look at those issues by default become issues of our community. And then you look at the way that where are our gains from the past, and do they still exist? And I mean, the idea of the sleeping giant starts to come more and more of what gets us up there. And I do think actually the Dream Act has the potential to be something that does unite a lot of different communities, particularly all the different sections of the Latino community.
Well, and I want to turn to Mercedes, because we've got a great panel, and unfortunately Mercedes has to leave us about halfway through. Okay. So I want to turn to you on that and kind of add to that question. Here's the Pew Research Center writing, again, this past summer they analyzed some issues about historic trends in voting and Latino vote, and they write, quote, historically Hispanic voter turnout rates are among the lowest of any race or ethnic group. They say in the midterm elections in 2010, 31.2% of Hispanics voted compared to 48% of whites, 44% of black voters, 31% of Asians. What is going to look different? We're hearing from different members of this panel about bilingual, or I should say language issues and educational issues, graduation rates, et cetera. What starts to look different in Rochester, in Monroe County, in the United States, if the Hispanic voting rate changes and surges to the levels at least of other backgrounds?
I think what we'll see is an increase in services to serve that population. I remember growing up in the 70s, and my mother making it a requirement, and I think everyone in the neighborhood would rally up, and we'd head over to agencies like Ibero, where they were focusing, and there were town meetings where we addressed issues that were affecting our community. I think there needs to be a grassroots effort again, just to get the community rallied up. But I think once we do get to that point, we'll see additional services, addressed to that population, to the Latino population.
And even though politically you may be somewhat opposed to some of the people who've been offering their ideas on what issues impact the Latino community, sure. Do you generally agree with the framing that these are some of the issues that are, if they're, it's not that they're not on the table, but they're not given the attention that they need, whether it's language issues, educational assistance for students, et cetera?
No, I absolutely agree with that. I think that all needs within this community are pretty much the same. Again, because we're in Rochester, we really don't see that need of immigration, of us focusing efforts within immigration. But, I do agree with that statement.
All right. I want to get to a phone call here and, again, let the full panel have a chance to respond. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. This is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes. Hi. Two things. One is, in terms of education, And I know this topic was discussed on this program recently, and that is using a more interdisciplinary approach to education, which this I guess this group called the Humane Education Plan is pursuing. And it's, you know, it's a new kind of name floating out there, but it's, you know, the concepts have been trying to have been advocated for years, and basically Latino folks, as well as many others, would benefit from these approaches because they cross lines, they're interdisciplinary, which means that they look at issues from all kinds of perspectives, including cultural differences and similarities, of course, and just a whole, without having much time to go into this right now. And I think that, I would like to think that Latino folks are looking at that because it's not that that's the only group, but it would benefit everybody, in my opinion. But I think it has a special approach, but I'm not sure if it's well represented in the community. The second point I want to make is that there was discussion a minute ago about political. To be quite blunt about it, a lot of us think Democratic Party and the Republican Party, there's little differences, in especially in their bigger picture issues. So what I would like to see is that, especially progressive third parties, the Green Party, and maybe there's others that people can identify, be asked to come to, because they're more than willing, the big believers in grassroots organizing. Some of us live right in the neighborhoods that do grassroots organizing. It's always a struggle, of course, but that when you're thinking of educating people politically, that be included, because a lot of the issues that these more progressive parties face, for instance, not taking any corporate money, affect people's everyday life, which a lot of people don't realize the connection. So I would hope that that would be open, because really right now it's controlled pretty much by, you know, a one-party system, which of course has its difficulties. Thank you.
Bonnie, thank you. Go ahead, Tricia.
Yeah, just, you know, I'd like to say that one of the huge problems that Ibero sees is the language barrier. For example, for years now, we've been trying to get someone to come in or a program where we can have someone teach English classes to Latinos who don't know English. And we've had, you know, volunteers who have offered to do it once a week, but then they weren't able to handle the number of students in the class. So certainly, for example, this is not a problem with everybody in the Latino community, because obviously not everybody has a problem with the English language, but some people just don't know English. And so then if they don't know English, they already, there's a huge disconnect, because if you don't know English, there's only so much that they're able to do, and it prevents them from being able to take advantage or participate in everything that's out there and available to them to participate in, which includes voting, registering, and learning about the elected officials.
I see you're nodding there, Mercedes, and I know we got to let you go, but you want to follow up what Tricia said there?
Again, I do believe that if language, if we were to address the language barrier, I think we'll see a surge in voter turnout within the Latino community. But again, there has to be that step that says, here's a resource, here's dollars that are allocated for it.
Can you hang for one more phone call?
Sure.
All right, let's grab Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan, how are you?
Good.
David Gant somehow holds on to that seat. He represents the Northeast, Southwest, and part of Gates, which is kind of laughable, the Gates part. But those are two rough areas of the city. And besides the public market, I mean, there's some major poverty there. It just seems like a rubber stamp. He gets elected every time, and it would seem like if there could be a Latino Democrat who had some really hard backing, maybe they could make a run at him. Or is he just too powerful for some odd reason to get him out of there? Or is there some truth to the fact that it's tough for a Latino to get the black vote as well?
Thanks for the call, Tim. Anthony, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I could speak to that. I was campaign manager for Jose Cruz, who did take on David Gant in 2012, and that campaign lost handily. And I think you learn some things, and a lot of it. And one is, I think David Gant's been around for a long time. And so, you know, I think you really have to look at where the representation part comes. We staged that campaign based on the idea of a lack of representation, especially for the Latino community. But I think that, you know, with incumbency, especially in the New York State Legislature, you again go back to the way that districts are drawn, and that was an election just after redistricting. That district became even stronger for the incumbent in that situation, and so you see in that idea, you know, you could have different ideas, but with someone who's been leading for that long in that district, it really did favor David Geddes, the incumbent. And so you look at those areas. But again, you had to look at the pockets within that district and see if you were counting on a Latino vote per se. Again, it's very marginalized in that it's cut in different places and in whole cloth. And again, I go back to the examples of you look at the Melissa Campos's, you look at the Jose Cruz's, and you look at the Jackie Ortiz's, who have run citywide for both school board and city council respectively. And they've received votes again from African Americans, from Caucasians, from Latinos, from multi-race, you know, Asians. And so you see that there's a strong turnout. I think it really depends on the race. It depends on what's being said. And I think, you know, we haven't really touched upon it yet, is that, you know, there is an idea here, especially in minority communities within ours, is that symbolic and charismatic representation does matter. And that's, there's something to be said there for that. So.
So David Gantz going nowhere? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
As far as I'm concerned, I don't think he's going anywhere. Well, that's his seat to choose.
And I don't mean to minimize any points you make. In terms of the actual issue of David Gantz, Mercedes, I don't know who represents you, but do you look at Tim's question regarding David Gantz, and do you see the disconnect that Tim sees, that why isn't there more mobilization to try to mount a better challenge?
No, I absolutely agree with that, with his point of view. I do think that David Gantz has been in the community. He's pretty much a household name all throughout Rochester. And it goes back to with the pockets of population that they serve. Latino community are pretty much within a certain northeast quadrant of the city. It would really take someone with incredible backing to really become a match for him or opponent.
Yeah, and I would just add that the power of incumbency, if you look at it across the country, is so massive.
Absolutely.
I mean, unless you have a lot of money and something is going on that really gets people kind of thinking about, we need a change here, it's very, very difficult to do that. I don't care what community you look in, what demographic you look in, if without the advent of term limits, incumbency is a very powerful tool.
Yeah, I know, as someone who's run for office multiple times yourself, you're right, though. It doesn't even matter if it's someone who's been in office for decades like David Gantz has. There's remarkable power in incumbency. Right. Tim, I hope we addressed your question. Tim? Are you still there? We've lost Tim. The bottom line, I think, here is, you know, in certain cases, it's going to be very hard to dislodge anybody. But let's do this. Let's take a 60-second break. We'll say goodbye to Mercedes. Great to talk to you. Thank you for joining the panel.
Thanks for having me.
And our panel continues as we look at the question of the Latino vote, getting more engaged, getting more people registered to vote, and what it would mean for American politics, Rochester politics, Monroe County politics. Anthony mentioned what kind of stirs people, and sometimes it does take a charismatic leader. Who are those people? We're going to talk a little bit more about that as well. So join the conversation at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, after this 60-second break on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In studio with us are Tricia Cruz, the Director of Development and Communications at Ibero-American Action League. It's the only dual-language nonprofit in Monroe County. Luis Perez is here. He's been a candidate for office in our area four different times, ran for mayor, and is talking about his perspective in politics and the Latino vote. Anthony Plandzicki is here. He is someone who has worked on many different campaigns, certainly considered a leader in the local Democratic Party, calls himself community organizer, campaign organizer, and more. And on the phone with us from Atlanta is Julio Saenz, who is the former editor of Conexión magazine through the Democrat and Chronicle and author of the book Rochester's Latino Community. Anthony, you said during the break that sometimes you don't take on a race. Sometimes you don't take on David Gantt because you really think you will win. Sometimes you take on a race because you think you should run or someone should get support, even if you know the outcome isn't likely to be what you want it to be. And sometimes that's where it has to be to start. Tell me about the impact of running sometimes to either to make a point or to start a ball in motion, even if it doesn't get there.
Well, I mean, throughout that race, I mean, the start of the kind of narrative for that race was David versus Goliath. You know, funny enough, on this side, David was the Goliath.
Yes, right.
So you look at that idea, but I think that, and I would even make the argument that David Gantt would agree with this, is that sometimes when things look impossible, you have to look at what are the needs of your community and really measure whether your community needs are being met by a specific leader. And at that time, we made a judgment call that said our needs were not being met, that the relations were strained and that we felt like there was underrepresentation, especially for Latinos in that district. And so we chose to run. And as much as of a hope, you always hope to win, but as much as of that, it was to prove a point that, you know, we're here, we exist, we're not an invisible community, and that we matter. And so, you know, take us lightly to your detriment, but we will be here and we're not going anywhere.
And if you get more people engaged in that campaign, knowing you're not likely to win, is the hope that someone who gets involved for the first time, whether you're working on a campaign or just registering to vote, they stay involved? You got to do it the first time.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that I encourage, you know, throughout. I'm a big, big, big proponent of getting more individuals to run for office and think about it. And specifically Latinos, I think, you know, throughout my career now, it's been a decade now in politics. I'm not that old, but it's been that long. And working in campaigns, I think that's been the focus of it, is getting new blood to run, getting individuals with fresh ideas and differences to get out there and put themselves out there, because incumbency can be scary. And sometimes the issues that need to be at the forefront and at the table are not until you voice those issues.
Luis, when you've run multiple campaigns, did you ever run to prove a point, thinking you wouldn't win, or did you run every time with the intention of winning?
Well, you know, we had to be very honest with ourselves. Running city in the city, we knew it would be very difficult to win as a Republican candidate. So certainly every time I ran, it was about making a point, pushing the envelope. It started really with my frustration with the Republican Party and me feeling like I wasn't represented. And that's when I first approached the party, Steve Benarek, our deceased friend, to say, you know, how can you call yourself the party of the county and not really be representing me? Beyond that, it was about challenging Latinos to get involved and to run for office. At the time I was at Bethel Full Gospel downtown, and it was about challenging the church to be more active and get involved and organize and vote. And so there was always a point to it. The other real important one for me was that even though I knew I could maybe unseat someone, I could create a public square, I could have some discourse take place, and there would be a public record of where that person stood, where he or she can then be held accountable down the road, even if I didn't win the election. And for me, that was one of the big wins, that we had people talk about the issues and where do you really stand here, knowing that they probably were still going to be there, and if it had to be questioned down the road, they were forced to talk about it, which is, you know, people I ran against did not like that. They were used to kind of just doing what they did, not putting a lot of effort into a campaign. And all of a sudden, they had to talk about the issues and they had to answer questions.
Yeah, interesting. And I don't seek to make this, again, a political divided discussion, politically divided discussion this hour, but you're still a Republican.
No, I disaffiliated 3 years ago. again, out of the frustration that I was in, I have re-registered now, and I'm thinking about running for office in 2015. And so that there'll be an announcement coming down the road about that.
Okay, so your previous campaigns have not dissuaded you from the process as tough as it can be.
No, because I always felt like I accomplished what I wanted to do. My team's suffered a little bit because people put in a lot of work into a campaign, and when you don't win, they kind of take it hard. But I would wake up, you know, happy as a lark and whistling the next day. I said, wow, look at what we did. Look at the message we put out in the community. Look at the organization we put together. Look at the number of people that we registered. Look at the number of people we challenged to vote, those kind of things. So for me, it was always a positive experience.
Tricia Cruz, when we hear, and again, you're not here to represent a party, but when you hear someone like Luis say, he approached Steve Mnarik at the time, approached the county and said, we're not represented enough. How can you call yourself the party of everyone if we're not represented enough? Again, this is a kind of moment where you're putting yourself at the table if you didn't feel like you were there before. And I know that there are plenty of Latinos locally who still feel very strong in the Republican Party, and there are some who don't. But do you at least see what Luis is talking about when it comes to asserting yourself, getting to the table, pushing that conversation forward more a little bit?
Well, of course, because I would say without a doubt that over here in Monroe County, overall, the Latino community is ignored, and we're not given the, I don't want to really use the word respect, but for example, we're kind of just pushed aside, but it's a two-way street because, for example, here, the Latino community doesn't come out and vote, and the numbers show that. If you go into the city of Rochester and you take a look to see how many people are even just registered to vote, and I know this because I spent an entire year in the city of Rochester registering people to vote and talking to people about registering to vote and the importance of it, but it's not happening. So it's a two-way street. For example, there are people, Latinos, who will come out and say, we're not represented, which is valid, but on the other side, Latinos aren't voting either. So
they're complaining we're not represented, but they're also not registering.
Exactly. So, for example, like going back to the whole thing when people may say, well, my vote doesn't count, so why should I vote? Well, I can tell you from personal experience that every single vote counts. So no one can ever say that to me. So it goes both ways. For example, the Latino community, and, you know, I'm generalizing here, but the Latino community in general may say, well, we're not represented. And maybe they shun, like, you know, politics and don't want to have anything to do with it. But on the flip side, elected leaders can say, well, here in Monroe County and Rochester, Latinos don't vote. So we have Latinos on one side, the elected officials on the other side, and no one's really coming together to try to kind of bridge this. Or at least, you know, people may be trying to bridge this, but it hasn't happened yet. That's why Ibero is really focused now on creating this voter education program that isn't going to lean one way or the other.
Okay, and so I'll start with Tricia. I'm going to get to Julio and go around the panel here. How do we start to fix these problems? You touched on it with Ibero, but if our listeners, they want to get registered to vote, they want to learn more about the process, language is an issue, et cetera. All of these issues that are facing the Latino community as a barrier to seeing more participation in American politics and local politics, how do we start to fix that, starting at Ibero?
Well, at Ibero, it's about offering the voter education program so that Latinos start understanding the process and meet the elected officials and hear from them. And like Luis said, start holding them accountable. If you said this in March of 2013, what are you doing in March of 2014 and 2015? Are you still, if you promised me something, did you hold on to that promise?
And Ibero is very actively going to help people accountable, huh? That's
the plan, because, again, we have to do something in the Latino community to really get our people to feel empowered and to start using their voice.
And not feel ignored, like you say. Julio, when it comes to fixing some of these problems, where do you start?
Well, I think we need a two-pronged approach. First of all, we have to, as everyone has mentioned, get Latinos registered to vote and active and educated, like, on issues that really matter to the muniness. They're not those high-profile issues that I mentioned earlier that rally Hispanics and other communities. We got to get them to understand these school board races and other things matter. The second part of this, too, is that the Hispanic community in Rochester has to figure out how to get the Hispanics in the suburbs involved, and either by contributing to campaigns in the city or or getting involved in the politics in the suburbs. But that's part of the problem, I think, is we're also losing half our voice, because at this point, according to the last census data, almost half of Hispanics live in the suburbs. And so now it's fighting a war on two fronts, and that's makes it very difficult. But that's where educating people and organizing people. One of the reasons I actually called Conexión was I was trying to create a connection between the Hispanics in the city and Hispanics in the suburbs, because back in the 70s, it was easy to organize a community, as Mercedes mentioned earlier, because you could basically walk through a certain neighborhood and get most people out and remind them to vote. But now everybody's so dispersed, and so whatever the solution of educating people has to make sure to reach the folks in the city, and then folks in the suburbs, some of who are now third and fourth generation, and be able to speak to them and what their issues may be.
Luis, how do you start fixing
this? It's a tall order. It's about number one, exposure, and number two, education. And so some of the initiatives that we've been involved in kind of focused on that. And it's also about relationship. People need to feel like there's some connection to what you're talking about and how it kind of applies to them. You know, in the early 2000s, 2003, 4, and 5, I was co-convener of the Latino Political Campaign Academy with Sue Costa and John Rodriguez. And in fact, people like Julio and the man sitting next to me here went through the academy. And there was just this buzz about being exposed to not just a local elected officials and realizing they're not much different than I am, and some of their issues are the same as ours, but really, really learning about how do you get involved and the good and the bad of it, and then, you know, giving people an opportunity to take that and make it happen. And we told folks, we had maybe out of that the three classes that we graduated, a total of 99 graduates, I think 6 or 7 have been elected to office. But many of those folks went back to their community, some in the city, some in suburban areas. A lot of them came from the suburbs, as Julio mentioned, and got involved in their communities in a civic way. And so that's what it's going to take. It's not for faint at heart, and it's a lot of hard work.
Anthony?
I think oftentimes we forget perspective, too, is that we're talking about this sleeping giant of the Latino community, and we talk about the census numbers and the increase in population, but it's very new. The fact that the numbers have just turned over and starting even to rival or lead the African American community in different areas, this is very new, and so it's a developing critical mass. And so, you know, the whole kind of cliche, Rome wasn't built in a day. I think we often have to look back at our communities and see about, you know, representation doesn't happen overnight. And so the cultivation of it, whether it be through the Latino campaign academies or just campaign academies in general, or civic understanding. And I think that's a large reason why a number of us, even those at the table, in the spirit of what Luis just talked about, created the kind of advocacy organization or group that gets together, La Cumbre. You know, that's recent and that's new, and it's been in the news, and it's been a convener of all of these groups that are, you know, looking out for the Latino community, just to talk and have a conversation and bring the suburbs and the city together and talk about what is going on, just to have a conversation. And I see that building up, and I think it'll be measured by a number of things. The more people who get involved in the next 5 years, and the more individuals who actually take that leap of faith and run for office, or take on leadership roles within their community, I think those now have to be the measuring sticks. And the last part is, again, voter registration.
We're going to get to the phones in a second. John, we're going to get to you in a moment here, but let me also build on the point that Anthony's making, because Julio made the point that the smaller races matter too. And again, we opened the hour by looking at some of the numbers. 17% of the United States is Latino, but 3% of American Senate and Congress are Latino. Obviously, there's not an equal representation there. It's easy to get sort of fixated on those big numbers. And I actually heard somebody recently say, well, if Marco Rubio just wins, you know, that'll solve a lot of things. Just like we're now in a post-racial society because Barack Obama won, right? I mean, some of these ideas are ridiculous, and winning one big race doesn't fix all of the issues. So I want to ask the panel about the value of these smaller races. We say smaller races. I mean, that's not even fair.
Right.
You've run for school board.
Right.
You've run for mayor, city council. We're talking about these kind of offices that might not be as sexy, but they really matter, don't they, Luis?
Oh, they're very, very important. And, you know, one of the things that as a community we struggled with, and then, you know, when we were having these kind of gatherings in the early 2000s, I used to always talk about we have to come up with a regional political strategy for Latinos. You know, what should we be working on? And some of the pushback was, well, we already have a Latino in the county legislature, or we have a Latino and I would always say, what community thinks that way?
You know, I call Latino.
Yeah, well, I call the poverty mentality because you felt like if we had a representative there, I said no other group thinks this way. So they're all very important, not just for our the people that we represent in terms of our background, but as I said earlier, if the Latino community is doing better, especially if it's growing and with all the issues that we bring in terms of numbers, then the whole community is doing better.
Tricia, you got to get people caring about all races on all the levels, I think, right?
Exactly. Again, it's so important for people to know, again, who their elected officials are, what they're saying, what they've been doing, what the issues that they stand on. I mean, it's really important for people to get involved.
John has a question for the panel. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I'd like to bring I like the point that was brought up by an earlier caller, term limits. I mean, term limits could equalize a lot of things out. There's no doubt about it. And the other thing is, generally, the populace in the United States has very poor voter participation and participation by every part of the society. And I think maybe the focus should be on being more homogenous versus setting out these goals of structuring different segments. I think we should look at American values and constitutional principles first, and I think we can't go wrong. And I think term limits would be a great start.
John, thank you for the call. Anthony?
Well, you'll see a great example of term limits this year. Almost the entire county legislature is up. And that is as a result of the 10-year term limits. You know, to the caller's point, the kind of idea of homogenous issues. Again, I think I beat this, I've been beating this over the head, but again, you look at the success of Latinos running citywide and you see that example. If those individuals run strictly on a Latino-based agenda, they're not going to win across the city. I think it's really kind of bringing themselves, and the individuals I'm talking about are Jackie Ortiz, Jose Cruz, and Melissa Campos, who currently sit in office citywide, but these are individuals who have had a citywide agenda that was not particularly just Latino focus, but I think it's pretty obvious you hear the name Ortiz and you are going to imagine that she's going to represent a certain community, or you make those assumptions. But I think.
Or Plunzinski.
Yeah, well, that confuses a lot of people. So. The Puerto Rican part is something I have to explain. So, but you look at those kind of outlets, and the caller's right. You have to look at it as a broad base. But there are, and we can't let go of this. I think the fact that the critical mass is just building, it really exacerbates the issue that there aren't that many representatives out there, because you don't hear about, well, the white community doesn't have representation. You don't talk about that, but there's a bigger critical mass of individuals voting in these areas, and so unfortunately, on the shoulders of Latinos and African Americans often is the fact that there is a microscope on their voting behaviors and their outreach and their civic mindedness because of the lack of representation. But there's also smaller populations of those individuals within districts to vote.
Julio, John seems to be saying, and I think it's really well intended, I think what he's saying is, why do we have to talk about Latino issues? Why can't we all just be Americans? You know, we're all Americans first. These are American issues. Why are we segmenting ourselves? That seems to be what John's saying. And what do you think, Julio?
Well, I think in an ideal world that's where we want to be. But the unfortunate thing is that we're not represented at all in the county legislature, for example. So the nuances that come with being Hispanic, with the needs that are particular to the community don't get heard. And I think any Hispanic candidate probably 85-90% of what they're advocating for or working on is going to be applicable to everybody, maybe even 95%. But it's that 5% that right now in certain political forums, as I mentioned, the county ledge, it's zero. So that I think that's the problem with not having enough representation of folks that are Hispanic.
I was just going to say, for those of us who care about the community, in general, we want more people to vote. We want more people to be involved. It doesn't matter to us where, you know, their background is. But specific to the Latino community, there are some issues around disconnect, around language barriers, you know, things like that that we can address specifically and help to bring some understanding and some knowledge that helps people get more involved.
Tricia, how would you answer that question?
You know, one of the things I would just like to add on is, for example, when we talk about the language barrier, people at home may be thinking, okay, well, why don't these people know English? What's stopping them from learning? We have a large number of people who are moving here from Puerto Rico, and they're coming here because the situation in Puerto Rico is so bad now. So they're coming here for a better life. You know, it's a cliche, but they're coming here for the American dream, to live a better life. I've met a lot of them. I talk to a lot of them. I work with a lot of them. And they want to learn English, but they don't have the money to take English classes. So that's what one of the reasons that it's so important for Ibero to be able to start offering English classes on a regular basis. So it's not as if they don't want to learn. They do. And again, if you have these Latinos who can go and take English classes and learn, it will help them become more connected to the community, because it's not like a Miami or a New York City where if you don't know English, it's okay. But here, you need to know English to be able to integrate.
You mentioned you've been using the term Ibero. Some people say Ibero. Regardless, spell it and tell us the website and how people can get in touch with you.
Yes. You can say either or. I say either or, Ibero or Ibero. It's I-B-E-R-O. And the website is www.iaal.org. IAAL.org.
And final thoughts from Anthony. I wanted to kick it to you because you seem to be saying you're right in that the media looks at those numbers under a big microscope, and all of a sudden we say, well, there is a problem. And I think there's a problem when it comes to Hispanic voting. The current record is not good. No. But you're saying there's a lot of population changes happening, demographic changes are happening. You are patient. And I think it sounds like you're an optimist that will change.
Well, those that know me would probably laugh and hear that I'm patient, but
okay,
at the same time, but I think we do have to be patient here, and really develop it. I think if there's no movement in the community, then we really have something to worry about. But I think it's up to us, those who are here on the show today, and those who are working in the community day in and day out, kind of our unsung heroes within the Latino community, to keep pushing and get us in that direction.
Great panel today. Julio Sainz on the phone with us from Atlanta. Great to catch up with you again. Thank you for taking the time for the program.
Thank you.
In studio, Luis Perez, Anthony Plenzinski, Tricia Cruz. Thank you to all three of you for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate the conversation and really interesting stuff as we look at all parts of our community here. Thanks to Juan and Val, is it just you? Oh, there, you're both there. Hi, guys. Great stuff engineering behind the glass today. I'm Evan Dawson. Thank you so much for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.